One of the things that's fascinated me over the last 20 years or so is the role of academia in terrorism. So what exactly is that relationship between terrorism academics and practitioners? Hi, this is Phil Gursky, President and CEO of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting in Russell, Ontario, Canada. This is the Canadian Intelligence, eh? I've had the pleasure of interviewing quite a few academics over the past, I don't know, 7 or 8 years I've been doing this podcast, some of whom are very well known, some less so. And amongst the better known ones, I'm gonna tip myself here and say I've done well. I've interviewed such incredible giants in the field as Bruce Hoffman 3 times, Brian Jenkins, David Rappaport. And I think I now have the full deck now, because I'm inviting to the podcast today a woman who's been writing about terrorism since the days of the FLN in Algeria. And if you have to Google that one, go ahead. But it was one of the early manifestations of ethno-nationalist terrorism, quasi-religious, in the 1960s. And I'm speaking, of course, of Martha Crenshaw, who recently retired from Stanford University. And she's joining me on the line today from Alabama. So, Martha, thank you so, so much for taking the time.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It's my pleasure.
Let's go back to first principles, Martha. What in heaven's name got you? I believe your background's in political science. Why would you study terrorism all those years ago? But let's face it, in the pre-9/11 period, terrorism was kind of a niche phenomenon, and I'm pretty sure wasn't sort of the soup du jour in many American universities. So what was it that drew you to terrorism studies?
Well, you're certainly right. When I told people that I wanted to study terrorism, they said, why don't you study nuclear deterrence? Why don't you study...
Of course, the Cold War days.
Why don't you study NATO? But I was interested in terrorism because of the Algerian War and because of the Vietnam War. I had spent my junior year in college abroad in Paris, and that was, I have to admit, 1965, 1966. The Algerian War had only been over for 4 years, so it was still a very live subject in Paris, you can imagine. And the Vietnam War was just reaching its escalation phase,
yes.
So it was also controversial and topical. And when I returned to the U.S. after that year and then went on to graduate school, our classes were full of studies of insurgency, a civil war, wars of national liberation, as they were called then. And I happened to read a short little book that said, nobody's really studied terrorism. And I thought, aha.
Ah, there's a niche for me.
there's a subject for me. And of course, the Battle of Algiers was famous at the time. And I thought, what could I say about terrorism? There isn't anything written. There almost was nothing. You mentioned David Rappaport. He and Brian Jenkins and the late Paul Wilkinson.
Yes.
We were the ones writing, in the early 70s.
Yep.
But in the late 60s, it was almost nothing. So I thought, well, I will just try to figure out what was going on in the Algerian War in terms of the use of terrorism. So then I got my start. And terrorism, well, in effect, we would just say all hell broke loose. There were hijackings, diplomatic kidnappings, shootings, the Munich Olympics in 1972.
Of course, yeah.
And terrorism simply continued and got more and more and more, more dramatic, more lethal. And so it was impossible not to study it. Mm-hmm. And it occurred in so many different places around the world that you didn't get bored thinking, well, I have explored this as far as I can go. All of a sudden now there's Sri Lanka and the LTTE.
Yep. Yep.
So it was a source really of endless interest to me, and is still a source of interest to me. I'm still working on it all these years later.
Let me go back, Martha, to the Algerian Civil War of the 1950s and 60s. And of course, I know vocabulary is something that you've developed an interest in. And, how do we use the term terrorism? I've argued it's badly misused in many ways, and even advocated just dropping the term completely in some ways. Going back to Algeria in those days, though, Martha, some would say that what the Algerians were doing against the French was not terrorism. They were freedom fighters. They were trying to gain independence from France, which eventually came, of course. How does this notion of what side of the argument you're on affect our understanding of terrorism to this day? Of course, look at what's happening in Gaza. You have people who say that Hamas is a resistance force. They're liberators for the Palestinians. And yet others say, no, Hamas, in my country, I'm not sure if United States, but Hamas is a listed terrorist entity. How does this inability for people to really gain a common understanding of what the T word means, how does that complicate matters for us?
It's an enormous complication. And for years, I've argued that we should consider terrorism as a strategy, as a method, as one form, one repertoire of political violence. And that the ideology of the actor, the side that the actors own, their cause, colors how we think about it, but it is the practice of violence. So one has to be willing to admit that a state, a non-state, an organization with whose aims one agrees in the end, say national liberation, an independent Palestinian state alongside of Israel, one agrees that these are worthy objectives, but one can disagree with the means.
Right.
I'm a great follower of the philosopher Albert Camus, who said famously one time,
"Of course,
defies the ends, if not the means."
Okay, so nowadays, you know, I often read in headlines, and I understand, you know, journalists often have to thread a very fine line, especially if they're reporting from in theater. You may have heard that the BBC and up here in Canada, the CBC were reluctant to call Hamas a terrorist group. And some said, well, we have reporters on the scene. If they call them terrorists, their lives could be put in danger. I've seen Al-Shabaab referred to as militants. I've seen words like rebels. Do you think we'll ever get there, Martha, in terms of any kind of common usage of the word terrorism, or is that am I just dreaming in technicolor here?
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but for years it's proved impossible. I think the term terrorist organization is problematic, but it's very difficult not to use it. Scholars use it, governments use it. So in effect, we want to say the actor that is using, practicing this form of political violence, attacks on civilians who are unsuspecting, unprepared, surprise attack, et cetera, atrocities. So we use that as sort of a shorthand, but then one slips into thinking, well, if the actor is a terrorist organization, then everything this actor does must be terrorism. It cannot be something else.
Right.
And vice versa. If we think this is a good actor, they're nationalists, whatever side you think you want to be on, then nothing they do can be terrorism. And it's essential, at least for academia. The general public is very difficult to control their perceptions and their frames of reference. But for those of us who are scholars, I think we should be very careful with our language. I try to be, and I realize that it's very tempting to slip into the language of saying, these are terrorists, this is a terrorist organization, rather than saying these people are practicing terrorism. And I understand full well the pejorative connotation of the term, which has been true from the beginning of the phenomenon itself, and that you would put yourself at risk sometimes by using that term in a conflict theater, because you're going to run up against people who share the aims of the group.
Right.
And it is so important to say, I share your aims, some of your aims, in the case of Hamas, certainly, since one of their aims appears to be to eradicate the state of Israel, in addition to creating a Palestinian state. But you have to say, I reject the means that you're using, and I don't accept the argument that you have no other choice.
Right. And of course, we're seeing this big time now with the demonstrations around the world for a ceasefire. Obviously, what's happening in Gaza is horrific from a humanitarian perspective. But as I remind people, Israel didn't go into Gaza just for willy-nilly. They went in there because of the attack on October the 7th. But let's get back a bit more to your career, Martha. You said that when you started out, you know, there are very few scholars that were following this. You're still involved right now. I guess it's a half a century since you've been doing this. In a very short span of time, can you share with my listeners how you think the field of terrorism studies within academia has changed over the years?
Well, you mentioned 9/11 and its impact on the study of terrorism. You're quite right that up until that point, terrorism was not considered, at least in the U.S., a national security problem. It was in other contexts, but in the U.S. and Canada as well, certainly not a national security problem. Perhaps not a nuisance, more serious than that. Certainly something that we were combating, but it was not tops on the agenda. And top scholars of international security, foreign policy, would never have named terrorism as a major threat to any national interest, really. It paled in comparison to many other threats. After 9/11, terrorism just jumps to the top of the agenda. It's all of a sudden the number one issue on everybody's minds, the number one threat in the minds of the public. And so there was a huge outpouring of analysis, some quite sound, some not so sound.
Less sound,
more opportunistic. Tom Friedman, the New York Times editorialist, famously said that when a terrorism expert came on television, he switched to the golf channel.
Oh, wow. Ouch.
Yes. Ouch. So I tried not to be described as a terrorism expert. It sounded, it put you in the company at that time of a number of people who were not experts, shall we say. However, in the middle of all of this, this vast outpouring of some research, some simply statements and contentious and problematic statements at that, you did begin to see, just because of the degree of interest, many, many more approaches to terrorism, for example, organizational approaches to terrorism, and some really serious work. So in the middle of a great flood, you found really, really some strong research coming out. So it's the field, and then the field became, there wasn't any such thing as terrorism studies in the early days. The whole idea of the terrorism studies, like security studies, now there's terrorism studies. It's become that important. So that is a good thing, but it also has meant that there's just so much material out there that no wonder the public is confused. I can't read all of it, and this is what I focus on.
Exactly. For what it's worth, I share with you this notion of terrorism expert. One thing I do when I talk to the media is please don't call me an expert, because I don't want to be associated with people whom, with all due respect, I don't think know very much about the field. Martha, before we started the podcast recording, we talked a little bit about the relationship between academe and practitioners. I'm from the practitioner world, you're from the academic world, and yet you shared with me that you've dealt an awful lot, I assume, with U.S. practitioners, given that you're an American. Can you describe for me the nature of that relationship? Do you think it's working as well as it should?
Well, there are difficulties on both sides, the practitioner side and the academic research side. On the academic side, there are some scholars and researchers who simply don't want to be involved with government. They just would prefer to keep a distance from practical political considerations, frankly, to keep a distance from the kinds of compromises that often have to be made when you're actually making decisions about what to do with a particular problem. There are trade-offs that are often very unpleasant. It's also the case that sometimes academics are very arcane, very abstract, so theoretical that they use jargon that even many other academics don't understand. It'd be very hard for them to get their point of view across in a way that's comprehensible, even to the smartest intelligent analyst. On the analyst side, they are sometimes impatient with the academic side, for that reason, that we speak in jargon and in vague sorts of admonitions about, well, don't overreact to terrorism. What does that mean exactly in terms of a policy that we should adopt? And also, as I'm sure you know, it's often difficult for people in the intelligence field to use open source data, whereas scholars work almost exclusively with open source data. We need to publish, and it's hard to access it from within the wall of effect of secrecy and of classified information. Then on the academic side, it's frustrating if you don't have access to classified information.
Yeah,
and sometimes you're told, oh, well, if you could see what we see, then you would see how wrong you are.
I know something you don't know.
And we don't know it, and we can't see it. If we do know it, and I have held security clearances, I can't publish it. I can't talk about it. I can't do anything other than have my judgment be informed, which is probably a good thing. So those are barriers to, let us say, mutual comprehension, but they can be overcome. Certainly my research now, some of my research is supported by the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay.
And we hope that what we're doing is part of research that they're funding, that it's material that's accessible and readable and useful both to academics and to the practitioner right. community. And that's a hard balance to strike, but I think it's very much worth doing.
There's no question. You hit the nail on the head, Martha. In terms of volume alone, I mean, how many journals now are devoted at least to some extent to terrorism studies? I've lost count. And to keep up with all the journal articles being produced. And you mentioned the language issue, which is a challenge, I think, to those of us without an academic background necessarily. Some of the terminology used is a little bit vague, and it's hard to incorporate into what we're doing. But nevertheless, I will say and state for the record, I've become friends with quite a few academics, not just here in Canada, but United States and around the world, whom I think very, very highly of, and have helped me understand terrorism as a phenomenon, certainly when I worked with the security service and afterwards. The other thing, Martha, about, you know, you're so-called retired. You sound about as retired as I am. So moving forward in your so-called retirement, what is it that draws your attention now after this long career looking at terrorism dating back to the Algerian Civil War? What are the issues that you still think are worth taking a look at, examining, explaining, and sharing your decades of insight with the people in the outside world?
Well, there's so many, but I will just name a few that are currently occupying me. One is the emphasis now in the U.S., Canada, Europe in particular, on what's called violent extremism. This is often associated with white nationalism, white supremacism.
Far right kind of thing, yeah.
Far right, identitarian sorts of ideologies. How much of the violence practiced by these sorts of groups could be considered terrorism? Is it all terrorism? For example, in the United States, there's been a big dispute over the January 6th assault
yes.
on the U.S. Capitol.
Of and course.
Some people, the U.S. Department of Justice said it was terrorism. I don't think it was.
Neither do I.
So how do you make that distinction? How do you deal with it? What parts of this violence is actually terrorism and what part is not? And how I have the idea of a sort of continuum of violence. You have clearly what is terrorism. And then you have at the other extreme of this particular continuum, sort of mob violence, street
right.
fighting, brawling,
right.
Assaults, very public, not clandestine violence at all. And not very strategically directed or very well organized, whereas terrorism, in my view, is very well organized, clandestine, mm-hmm. very strategic. So where along that line, for example, do you place what we call terrorism by inspiration? Someone who answers an appeal from, say, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula to
right.
Build a bomb out of a pressure cooker and set
right.
it off at the Boston Marathon.
Exactly.
What is that? Is that terrorism as well? What about someone who's just copying, imitating what he's seen, like the Christchurch
yes.
shootings
yes.
in
yes.
New Zealand, which were live streamed? So we have social media. How do we fit it into our classic understanding of what terrorism is? So that's one of the things that sort of is still a puzzle to me now, and I think a very contemporary issue that needs straightening out.
It's fascinating, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think terminology is huge, and we here in Canada have vacillated badly in recent years over when to use terrorism and when not. We had an attack by a guy with an ISIS flag on his dash, on his dashboard, who was not charged with terrorism. Yeah, we had somebody who was a purported incel, although he wasn't, and people did call that terrorism. So there's a huge inconsistency, and I think it will vary, obviously, according to national and international laws in terms of what is the best applicability of terms like terrorism. But are you, you know, going back to our earlier point, Martha, are you any more confident that if you were to come up with this very explicit, well-explained spectrum of, you know, violent extremism and terrorism, that you'd get any more people signing up than we have in the past when talking about terrorism alone?
It's very difficult to know what impact one's writings and arguments have. Occasionally, I get feedback from someone who will write or email saying, what you said about this really affected how I thought or how I acted in response to this particular attack or threat. But most of the time, you really don't know. You have to simply hope that that you have made some impact, that somebody has read it. Of course, now that we have the internet and we have websites, you can tell how many hits, you can tell how many people have read what you've written. For example, I have a website still in progress called mappingmilitants.org that has profiles of different groups. And it's an effort simply to put out objective information for everybody. It's free, it's accessible. Just here's information that is objective. I'm not making an argument for or against this group. Just here's the facts, and sort of like a RAND report, very factual. And just put out some facts and some clearly logical arguments that are hopefully well-reasoned, hopefully supported by the evidence. And you simply have to hope that you've made an impact. But it's worth trying even for one's own satisfaction.
I suppose. Well, listen, Martha, there's no question that over your very long career looking at terrorism, you have had an impact on a great many people, not just in your United States, but in Canada, around the world as well. So thank you for your service to academia. Thank you for your contributions to our collective attempt to understand the nature of terrorism and where it's going. And thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was a wonderful discussion, and thank you very much for the kind words.
So that was my conversation with Martha Crenshaw, truly a giant in the field of terrorism studies around the world. So what do you think about our conversation about sort of how terrorism is treated by academia and the relationship with practitioners? Love to hear what you thought of our conversation. You can reach me on email, borealisrisk@gmail.com, or on Twitter @X@BorealisSaves. You'll also find me on LinkedIn and on Facebook. If you like the content, want to get more, go to the website, newly redesigned, borealisthreatrisk.com. Hit the subscribe button. It's free of charge. Love to hear your feedback as well as ideas for future guests and topics. We'll talk again soon. Until then, take care.